having not been ever touched with a kid with a disability, I don't know that I would have the same level of compassion or care for others who have, that are caring for somebody, or others who have kids in the same situation. So my wife and I, we've made it a ministry.
Welcome to the CGN Mission and Methods Podcast, Season 4. My name is Nick Cady. I'm the pastor of Whitefields Community Church in Longmont, Colorado, and I will be your host this season. The goal and vision of this podcast is that it would be a forum for communication about Calvary Global Network. We want to share with you some of the stories about what God is doing. We want to talk about some of the initiatives we're involved in spearheading, and we want to answer the questions you might have about who we are as a network. On the episodes in this season, I'm joined by Pastor Brian Broderson, the founder and president of CGN and the pastor of Calvary Chapel in Costa Mesa, California. For season 4 of the podcast, Brian and I will be interviewing the members of the CGN executive team so you can get to know their stories, hear about their ministries and the roles they play in CGN, and find out what they're excited about for the future. In this episode, we speak with Bill Buffington. Bill is the pastor of Calvary Chapel in Inglewood, California, a community that is rapidly changing. And in this episode, Bill shares about some of the ways they are addressing those changes, reaching out, and discipling the people God is bringing their way. Bill is also the father of a child with a disability, and he shares how his son's disability has shaped him and his family, and how it has changed the way he approaches ministry and leads his church to love people who have unique challenges. Here's the episode. Welcome to the CGM Mission and Methods Podcast. My name is Nick Cady, and I'm joined today by Pastor Brian Broderson, and we have in the studio with us Bill Buffington. Hey, Bill.
Hey, how's it going?
Good. Good to have you with us. Bill, you're part of the executive team. That's what we're doing here on this season of the Mission and Methods Podcast. We're interviewing the members of the executive team to give our listeners a feel for your heart, your vision, your role in CGN, what you're excited about for the future. So maybe tell our listeners a little bit about yourself, who you are, where you serve, how God's gotten you to that point.
All right. So my name is Bill Buffington. As you said, I pastor Calvary Chapel in Inglewood, born and raised in Inglewood my whole life. So that's, I love the place of my birth. You know, I got involved in Calvary Chapel. I got saved in 95. I was 19 years old. I was in a Baptist church in Inglewood. That's where I first went. And I got introduced to Calvary Chapel through the radio. So K-Wave, way back then. So I would listen. I would listen to Pastor's Perspective. Back then it was called Every Man an Answer. And I was learning that a lot of what I was experiencing in church maybe wasn't really lining up with the scriptures. I remember they sent me a book for free called, it was one of Chuck's books called Charisma versus Charismania. That cleared up a bunch of things for me. But that was my introduction to Calvary Chapel. I would go on a few years. And then after I got married, I really felt led by God to lead my family somewhere, you know, we can get into the word, where the word was going to be right. So we ended up joining a Calvary Chapel in Downey and went through Bible college and got involved there. My heart was always, though, when I was looking for a Calvary and I couldn't find one or a church like that in my community, I think the Lord there planted a burden in my heart to see a church that would teach the Bible like this in my community. So while I was serving at the one church and doing youth ministry and all that, my heart was always to eventually plant a Calvary Chapel in Inglewood. And we were finally blessed to be able to do that in May of 2010. And we've been going since then. So 12 years into our church plant.
That's awesome. So yeah, for any of our listeners who don't know, you know, where's Inglewood, where's Downey? That's all in Los Angeles, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Like, how far is Downey from Inglewood?
About 30 minutes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Is it a different type of community?
That's another world. Downey's, you know, white, Hispanic, you know, I'd say it's not a hood. It's a nice area. So it'd be a nice place to go raise your family and have kids and stuff. And it's probably why God let me be there 10 years while my kids were growing up. So it's a nice place. Inglewood is, I love Inglewood. As some people would consider Inglewood hood. It's less hood today than it was when I was growing up. But, Inglewood is the demographics there is going to be predominantly Black and Hispanic. The community is changing at this point, but that's what it's always been. Inner city kind of a feel. That's the feel of the city. And, you know, so those are two different worlds. You know, interestingly, I've always been more comfortable in this. And when I left Downey and moved back to Inglewood, I was so happy.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it was like I was trying to explain to her what it was. I'm like, if I walk my dog in Inglewood, everyone's going to talk to me. No one's afraid of me. No one's like, you know, you walk, hey, what's up? They want to know who you are, where you came from, you know? And Downey, I'm a people person. I'd walk the dog and I'm like, hey, how's it, you know? I'd try to greet people, meet them, and they were like, hey, just please keep going. You know, I had almost no relationships. I lived in a house in Downey for 11 years. And the only relationships real that I had were next door neighbor, Christian across the street. And that was just how it was. I moved to Inglewood, and within 2 weeks, I know everybody just by virtue of walking the dog.
Yeah.
I know half the block already, you know. So,
well, Bill, so since we're on the topic of Inglewood, and Inglewood is, so Los Angeles, of course, is a county and a city.
Mm-hmm.
And but you're really close to kind of downtown LA, where Downey would be a little further out, obviously.
Yeah.
So Downey back in those days was really more white suburban, now probably larger Hispanic population than,
yeah.
You know, I grew up by Downey when I was a kid. And I mean, even where I lived in Bell Gardens, I mean, you cross the bridge into Downey, it was like a whole nother world, man. All the kids were dressed so nice and everybody had braces and everybody had the, you know, they had the brand new Stingray bicycle and you're riding some old clunker thing going, man, I wish I lived in Downey with all these rich kids.
Right.
So, but you said this, and I want you to talk about this a little bit. Inglewood is today, it is not the place necessarily that it was even 5 years ago.
No.
It's changed radically. Tell us what's happened there.
All right. So they build SoFi Stadium, the SoFi new Stadium. Rams and Charger Stadium. And so with the building of that, they made massive changes to the community. There were areas, there's an area in Inglewood, they call it the Bottoms. The gang that, you know, ran that was Crenshaw Mafia Blood Gang. So my entire, you know, childhood coming up, that was like, don't get caught up over there. You know, it's just a rough, rough area, a bunch of apartments on zigzag streets up and back, you know. They went through and just once they decided we're building this here, we're going to make money over here, they went through and cleared it out. They pretty much put a special task force. Anybody that we catch outside over here, you go to jail. When you get released with the understanding that you cannot be over here, you go right back. And so I said, y'all could have done that my whole life. we lived in terror all these years. Y'all could have just wiped it out. But anyway, so they cleaned up things. They're building, they're making shops and stores. And so, you know, even the block that I live on in the avenues, which when I was growing up, that was an all black area. In the last 5 years, the prices of the house values have shot up. So people that have owned these houses forever are cashing out. So they'll sell and go to Texas or somewhere where they can get a whole lot more house for their money. And the people that are able to afford to move in, you're not getting any new black neighbors. Mm-hmm. Predominantly, you know, pretty much on our block, if I could take 10 houses that have sold, the new neighbors are white.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a change in the makeup, like what the city is like in terms of what's going on. There's a change of even the cultures and people that are that are being added to the city. So,
yeah, I mean, you know, you and I, a while back, we were having coffee at a really cool coffee spot.
Right. Hilltop.
Yeah. And, you know, even before that, I remember we were at that one place. We were sitting out front. We were sitting on the street having a coffee at a nice little table. And you just sort of said, like, you know, 5 years ago, we'd be shot if we were sitting here what we're doing.
So that,
right,
the
now,
block so. That we were sitting on, right, that was on Market Street.
Yeah.
I remember, like, high school, even later on, like, that was an area where you'd have, it's a blood gang area.
Yeah.
So they would be up and down the block over there. Now it's like, you know, it's seats out and coffee and put my pinky up. It feels completely different. Yeah.
So how is that affecting the ministry? How has that changed what's happening with you guys as a local church in the area?
That's the cool thing about being, a ministry. I think, you know, for us, it doesn't matter, you know, what people look like, you know, or where they come from. They need the same thing. And so rather it's somebody, you know, from the bottom of the barrel, someone from the, you know, some upper crust and everything in the middle, people need Jesus just the same. So the church, and we're seeing in our church is more diverse today than it's ever been. We're predominantly black, but we have a good amount of it. We have blacks, Hispanics, we have whites that are part of the core of the church, that are serving, that are actively a part of. So, you know, that part, I guess for me, I keep trying to coach the church in we have an opportunity to model to the world what it should be. So even in my community, as you know, white neighbors come in, I know everybody's not thrilled about that. So I make it a point. You know, I go out of my way to make sure I give a warm welcome to them, and that they've met a neighbor that they felt welcomed and encouraged. And because I don't know, I can't speak for how everybody else is going to receive them, but as believers, we get to make a mark here, you know? And so I think for believers, no matter what the climate is, we have an opportunity to be what the world is not.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, you know, I'm even thinking as you're saying that, I'm thinking how, you know, that season in Downey, and how in some ways God probably used that to prepare you for some of what's happening right now.
Right.
Gave you the ability to relate to white people, not to, you know, just go, oh, you know, what are these white people doing moving in? But just like, yeah, you've had tons of, you know, relationships with whites.
My time at the church in Downey was, because it was culture shock when I got there. Yeah. But what I learned as I was there was, because I was coming from a all-black everything kind of culture. So as I got immersed in there, and I have brothers to this day, I have like lifetime, deep, meaningful friendship relationship with guys who, one of my buddies, Steve Pearson, he just did a thing at his church. He sent it to me, a clip, but he, you know, we realized we have nothing in common but Jesus, but this is my bro. We love each other. You know, he's like, man, you like rap. I like rock. I went to his house. I like big dogs. He's like, he's got these little poodles, and we're like, we couldn't be any more different, but we both love the Lord. And that's been enough to maintain over 20 years of intimate friendship, you know?
Yeah.
So God, I think he really established my heart there. But yeah, living there and being like, feeling like an outsider, I know how I wouldn't do somebody, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Well, let's talk about family a little bit. I wanted to ask, who's your wife? Is she from Inglewood as well?
My wife's from Compton. So similar, but a little different. But yeah, we both are from, you know, very similar areas. Yeah.
Okay.
From the hood.
Yeah.
Yeah.
which is good. I'm glad.
Well, yeah, and I wanted to ask about your church. So, I mean, so with the changes that have taken place in the area where you're at, are most of the people at your church, they come in from the local area? Do you have people coming from outside the neighborhood?
So I think the core of our church is from the community. And then we have been blessed over the last few years with a lot of people will drive out, you know? And so I would credit that. We've been able to be on K-Wave and Monday through Friday, you know, through the week. And so that's been a huge blessing to us, in that there are people that are find us or become aware that we're there. And some have decided, you know, we've had, you know, a couple from Corona that have been coming for a few years, and now they're part of leadership. We had another family from out that way that was driving in, Marietta, and they ended up moving down, and they're serving in the youth ministry. So,
and this is like an hour and a half.
Yeah, so it's a huge commitment.
Yeah.
Yeah. So with that, you know, we have the core people that are from the community, but we definitely have people that come from other places, but they've made this their home fellowship, which has been sweet. You know, it's made it diverse. And to me, I think that's the beauty of, you know, we can be in the body of Christ, that people who, the thing that we're relating to is the our love for Jesus, and the other things just don't weigh as much, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I wanted to talk about your family as well, because I know you have a child with disabilities, and I wanted to ask you, how has that shaped you as a person, but not just as a person, but also as a pastor and as a leader?
Mm. So I have a son. My son, Billy, is autistic, and we found out when he was 2 years old. Major adjustment, you know, that at that time my wife was working. My wife was a principal, public school district. She ended up coming home to be with him. That was a major life alteration. The way that we can look at it today and see that we're affected is having not been touched with a kid with a disability, I don't know that I would have the same level of compassion or care for others who have, that are caring for somebody, or others who have kids in the same situation. So my wife and I, we've made it a ministry. We have a bunch of families in our church with kids with autism, cerebral palsy, Down syndrome, you name it. And all the things that churches do wrong, we just make sure we don't do. You know, they don't have to sit somewhere special. You don't have to. I've heard of people with, you know, wheelchairs and kids are on ventilators because they got cerebral palsy, and they were told by a church that the breathing apparatus is a distraction. Could you guys move?
Mm.
Just crazy things that you would think a church would just know better. You know, so we've made it a ministry to welcome them. To, you know, we'll we'll prepare someone to serve your kid specifically. So if your kid needs a one-on-one, we'll raise up someone so you guys can have an hour of break and know that someone who understands your kid's disability is going to be watching over them. It's not going to be a burden to us. We're not going to treat it like, you know, oh man, they're coming. They came today, you know. All the things, again, that we experienced. We had a children's ministry teacher at a church that I love, a great church. It's not representative of the church. It was just a specific teacher that, in her desire to not deal with my son, she made up something. She accused him of something. And once they were able to unravel that hadn't happened, for me and my wife, it was like, well, I don't want my kid with you if you don't want him that bad, you know? And so that's impacted how we do ministry. Mm-hmm. We make sure there's room for them, that they're cared for. But I think the most powerful way I could see it in my wife, myself, and all my kids, there's a compassion that I could not have manufactured, that I've been touched by it. I've been affected by something. And I'm sensitive to the needs of other people in this, in a way that I don't think I could have been otherwise.
Mm-hmm. So. And how old is Billy now, Bill?
Billy's 22.
He's 22. Wow. Yeah. And he has a place at the church, right?
He loves church. He loves it, man. He loves people. He loves to greet people. And the people that he sees at our house, that I guess he feels like, oh, they're friends then. So he will greet them and, you know, go up to them. But he loves people and he loves to laugh. So anytime people laugh at church, he mimics laughter. That's he'll do it at the movies and everywhere. But if there's laughter, he just jumps in. So Bill has all the joy, all the peace. Mm. And he's probably the happiest person I know. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I remember a couple of years ago, we had someone come to our church who had an autistic son. And she asked, you know, what can we do to help accommodate him? And I, you know, kind of had this ministry team that was overseeing this area at the time. And they together came to the conclusion that we should just tell this family that they should just go somewhere else because we can't accommodate them. And I found out about it after the fact, and I actually contacted the family. I said, I'm sorry, that's not the heart, you know, that we want to have. And we did end up accommodating this person. They're in our church for years. But yeah, tell us a little bit more about that, because I think that is something where I think some people think maybe really big churches can accommodate people with disabilities. Mm. But what would you say to that?
Yeah, so we had a moment at our church that ended up being a teaching moment. We had a family with a son with a mental disability. He's a tall black man, maybe in his 20s, and he loved worship. But he wanted to be right at the stage. He didn't want to be at the seats. He wanted to be at the stage. And he was very emphatic with it. You know, he wanted to clap, but he was enjoying worship. And so I told the mom, I said, let him be. I'm up on stage. I'm like, I it's okay. I let the security guys know, hey, whenever you see this kid, he's harmless, you know, he's got an issue, you know, but he just wants to be up front for the worship, you know, so let him be. And he had a meltdown one service, and he went out, you know, he yelled. And when he went out, I just stopped and I told the church, I said, hey, if we can't love him, I don't want to do this. Mm. Right. So I said, I got a message to preach, and we're in the midst of worshiping Jesus. If we can't accommodate him, this is nothing he did to become this way. If we can't accommodate him, we can't love him where he's at, then what are we singing about? What are we doing anyway? And so for me, it was a moment to tell the church, you know, don't be bothered by that. We're not inconvenienced by him, you know? And so should he come back, you know, we're going to love him and minister to him. And so I'd rather that than to feel like, hey, we kept it clean and neat and our worship was perfect and our teaching was uninterrupted. But we sent that family home and said, you guys can't worship here. I couldn't do it. Yeah.
Yeah. How many, as you're describing that, I mean, how many times do you think that happened in Jesus's ministry?
Right.
This is like a daily occurrence.
Show up with a cripple right back, you know, they throw him right in front of him. So, and he would stop and attend to it, you know? So we have another young lady, a family that the whole family is part of our church, and they've got a young lady with Down syndrome, and she loves church. And she's a little vocal sometimes while I'm preaching, but other people she doesn't know the difference between, you know, people talking or saying amen or yes. So she's just a little vocal. And again, it's a few times I just will let it be a teaching moment. I'm like, look, she has what she has, but she wants to be at church and this is her church family. And, you know, we're going to be okay with it. Mm-hmm. I'd rather you leave than her. Mm-hmm. And, And we'll create a culture that can accept that. And you know, we're worshiping and we're listening, you know. So, yeah, that's how I've been affected, you know. Mm-hmm. And I don't know that I would be this way if I weren't.
Yeah.
So I'm grateful in that sense.
Yeah. So, you know, you've mentioned a few things already, but I'm just curious. Do you have any other words of advice for maybe smaller church pastors who say, you know, I don't have the facility to create like a special area for people with disabilities? I mean, any words of advice for what they can do to accommodate?
I would say first, pray. A lot of times people act without prayer and they act without deep thought. And when you do that, you might want to fix this moment rather than if you sat back with the Lord for a minute, God may show you how you can minister to. He sent some people to you that have a specific need. You know, you as a pastor that's responsible to God for his sheep, right? I got to at least pray about what we could do to accommodate them, how we could serve them. And so I would say that, pray, you know, before you act, before you do anything, make sure you brought it to the Lord and sat with it. Seek counsel. You know, if you don't have any understanding of this, find someone that does so that they can enlighten you. You know, they can open your eyes to it. So, and that would be really healthy. Sometimes things that we haven't been touched by, but we may have a friend or someone that we know and trust that we can reach out to and say, hey, bro, I had a family come. They had a kid with this situation. I know you're aware of that. You know, help me out. You know, I think these are things that a loving, caring shepherd should do. Not just, you know, not just a quick fix, but, you know, what God, you brought them here. What do we do about this? You know,
and you know, Bill, you know this, and I've had many conversations. We have a ministry here called Limitless, and it services both adults who are, you know, have some type of disability, mm-hmm. you know, a lot of times it's mental, a lot of folks in wheelchairs, you know, cerebral palsy, things like that. But it's also, we have a children's version of it as well. And talking to parents with children who have these disabilities, the common thread is we've not been able to find a church that really wants to work with us. You know, it they do feel like an inconvenience. And a lot of times they just decide we can't go to church. Because yeah. there aren't any churches. So, man, I hear what you're saying.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, in addition to that, just kind of shifting back to a previous topic, you know, you were talking about the changes in your community, but I know that your church has also been experiencing some growth. So maybe how have you been handling that growth? I know you're doing some discipleship things and things like that.
Yeah, so we do a class called Solid Foundation. And for as our church, that's kind of our entry point. So if someone comes, they start attending and they decide, hey, I'm going to make this home. I want to get involved. Before we ever have someone serve or get involved, we ask that they go through. It's a 7-week class that we do. We run it, you know, Monday nights, and then we'll finish a group and do another one. So we ask people to go through that. We deal with salvation, the disciple in the Bible, prayer, spiritual gifts, spiritual warfare, you know, personal work of the Holy Spirit, function in the church. We try to hit all these topics and get clarity. I teach it right now. I got some other guys that we're training up to do it, but it really gives me a feel for, you know, where the people are coming from. You know, we get a lot of questions on the gifts because we got people coming from different places and they do it different. So it's my opportunity to do Q&A live with the people that are going to be part of our church, you know, mm-hmm. and make sure that we've covered these things together. So That's for me, it's been a really important part of making sure we're making disciples, that we've actually taken time. And before we ask you to do anything, we make sure that you understand salvation, that you know that you're born again and you got some foundational things under your belt. And we've got a chance to know you a little bit before we put you into something, you know? So, and that's with growth, it seems that's been a way for us to have healthy growth. Is that before people get involved, we've taken time to pour in and get to know them a little bit. So, yeah.
So Bill, I want to ask this too, and it's somewhat related. And this is a common experience. So, as Nick mentioned, your church has been growing. Actually, it's grown over the past few years. Even during the pandemic, you mm-hmm. guys grew some, and this has. Over and over again for you, this has presented a problem with your facility. So mm-hmm. you and I have been in a conversation for a couple of years about that elusive building that
yes.
we're hoping the Lord brings along. But talk about that a little bit, because I think that there are a ton of guys that inevitably at some point you're going to face this. You know, mm-hmm. you're going to have to relocate. Nick, of course, you've done that. I've done that over the years. Tell us a little bit about that journey, Bill.
Yeah. So the building we're in now, we were in schools for 6 years. So 5 schools in 6 years. So a bunch of hopping around. So that gets old fast. And then we finally got this building, and it was a lease, a 5-year lease initially. And we had to put a bunch of money into it to make it usable for us. And it just was amazing for us to be planted. And we saw, once we were planted, it seemed like we flourished in this place. And so just to be in one place, one community. And so for 5 years, we flourished. Right before the pandemic, we were like, man, we're done. We can't do anything more in this place, you know? And so before the 2020, before New Year's 2020, we had concluded that, you know, we needed to start to pray and look for something else. And so we did. We started praying then. We started the search in right before 2020. We found out afterwards that the guy that owns the building, they had previously been turned down to tear it down and build housing. Well, now they had got the permits and the loan. And so they weren't going to renew our lease. They were going to plan to tear it down. So we kind of had some pressure there. We're in a place where, you know, we're over a year and a half. We're there. He's given us all of 2023 to basically save and try to get in a position to buy something or find something. Inglewood, because of all the you know, they built the SoFi. Now they're building the Clipper Stadium. Anything in the vicinity over there is going to be sky high. Mm-hmm. And so finding buildings with parking has become very, very difficult. So there's a ton of churches that have closed down, have been shut down almost because of COVID for 2 years, but they're owned by denominations that are just holding them. Mm-hmm. So we're looking for the Lord to open a door for a facility that we can flourish and grow in the city. Yeah. And, you know, there's some options out, but I really feel like we're supposed to be in the city. And so we're looking and praying. We have not found that place as of yet. So,
and you know, that can be frustrating, right?
Yeah.
But at the same time, I think you learn from experience that even in the frustrating season, God is actually doing something. You might not think that. You know, might think, man, we're stuck here. We need a bigger space and we're growing. I remember years ago when I was pastoring in Vista, and we, you know, were in a space and we really needed to move out of it. And I thought we needed to move out of it like a year ago. And yet the Lord, it was funny. It was like the Lord forced us to use every square inch of that property before he opened the door for us to move. But he had a place for us, you know? Mm-hmm. And I think when you and I have been together, you know, we're driving around Inglewood and I'm just thinking, you know, the Lord's got a spot. And it's just, even though it feels like it's the time,
right?
It's obviously not the time.
I've been comforted with the reality that if he has something for us, I can't rush it. God's going to do, I learned that, right? God's going to do it when he's going to do it. There's nothing stopping us from what we're called to do today.
Yeah.
You know, for me, it's just hard when people are like, hey, we got any news? We got any play? I got nothing. Just keep praying, you know? So that's probably harder than, I'm a realist. So the reality is there's nothing. I mean, God hasn't provided anything yet.
Yeah.
And we got everything we need for today. We have a place to meet this week.
And when the time comes, the Lord knows. It doesn't matter the gentrification. It doesn't matter that the housing prices or the property know, prices have gone up. God will provide that spot and provide for you. One other thing that I want to circle back around to, you mentioned K-Wave. Not everybody's going to know that K-Wave is a radio station.
Right.
It's actually the radio station we're sitting in right now recording this podcast. This is Calvary Chapel's radio station here in Southern California. And Bill, you are broadcasting on K-Wave. And I want to ask you this specifically because I know that there will be people listening to this. Maybe they live in a community where there is a radio station, maybe that's favorable toward, you know, Christian programming, maybe a Christian radio station. They might have an opportunity to do a little program. Some people say, well, you know, radio's outdated. Nobody listens to the radio anymore. Why would you do that? You should invest in online stuff or whatever. Mm. Even though people say that, I don't think it's necessarily true.
Let me speak to it.
Yeah, and Nick's shaking his head because Nick does some radio stuff too. So, yes, speak to that, Bill. Encourage people, guys, you know, that might be listening, like, about the opportunity.
I'll say this. If you're listening and you're in ministry somewhere, the radio has blessed us tremendously in that. There are the messages that, you know, I was laughing with one of our leaders, right? There were messages that we did for midweek when I may have had 12 people in the building. Mm. And at that time, right? Yeah. That's just where we were at that time. And so now these messages on the radio and they're going out, you know, multiplied hundreds of times further. All these other people are hearing it. And it's been how many people have found us. And so I was sharing earlier with the guys here that, you know, in our class, we asked people, you know, how do they find us? And one of the most other than, you know, person to person reach out, the radio is the number two way that people end up showing up. And so for us, when we looked at this year, you know, as far as what we do for outreach, we view the radio as this is probably one of the biggest outreaches that we have. This goes further than anything else we can do. And so if the goal of a church, if you're saying, man, I'm preaching the word because I want the word to go out. Well, if you preach the word and put it on the radio, it's going to go out multiply times further than it would go out in your, you know, in your sanctuary. And this is going to be the people in jail, people that are on their way to work. It'll blow you away that someone is listening to a message today that you preached 8 years ago and God's speaking to them today, you know? And so the letters and things you get back.
Yeah.
I shared with you the one girl who we went to Leviticus and this girl wrote us and said that she had, you know, repented of a gay lifestyle and was, you know, walking and she still interacts with us, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, some people would say, and Nick, you can chime in on this too. You know, some people would say, well, you know, the Christian radio, I mean, you're just sort of, what are you doing? You know, you're speaking only to Christians. You're just going to draw people. Mm. Maybe if they're going to come to your church, they're going to leave another church. Why would you do something like that? How would you, both of you?
Yeah. So, you know, I'm based in Colorado and we have a radio station there called Grace FM that broadcasts on the Front Range. And, you know, I was of that opinion because our friend Ed Taylor, he runs the radio station. He was reaching out to me for a couple of years when I first came to Colorado and saying, hey, you should get on the radio. I was like, no, I basically viewed it as like, this is like entertainment for Christians. Like some people watch movies and Christians listen to people preach on the radio. And then I was like, okay, fine, we'll do it. And we first started out just on Sunday afternoons, which probably not a lot of people driving at that time. But I was amazed because I was totally wrong. Yeah. The people who are listening to that, you know, what's one of the interesting demographics of people who listen to Christian radio is people who are interested in Christianity, but they don't want anybody to know yet that they're interested in Christianity.
Yeah.
They haven't yet darkened the doors of a church, but they're kind of just checking it out. They're putting their toe in the water. And so we get people all the time. You know, I do a call-in show there as well. And again, you might think that the call-in show is going to be, you know, obscure questions that don't really matter, but just the opposite. You get people calling in who genuinely, they want to know, what does the word say? How do I get saved? I mean, God's done so many things through it. And, you know, I think that it's not dead yet. And it's actually kind of a benefit that so many people are saying that it's dead because it's making more airwaves available for Bible teaching.
Yeah.
Yeah. I would jump right in and say, you know, to the one question, you know, it's just, you know, Christians are going to hop from place to place. Well, I used to say, I only want non-believers to come, new believers, you know, but then we've had so many people come from such kooky, you know, weird, abusive church backgrounds where it's like, gosh, man, if we can help you find somewhere healthy, then that too, you know, it's not a, you know, so that's not a bad thing if someone leaves an unhealthy situation and finds through the radio a healthy one, you know. So I think those are, you know, it's being used in that way. And like you said, there are people who didn't know the Lord. There are people that are coming to Christ that are, you know, grown up in church or there, you know, there's something has them listening to Christian radio. The guy that led me to Christ as a teenager in his room, listening to a rap station, one station knock over, it ends up on K-Wave and Raw Reeves preaches a message and he gets saved and he walks powerfully with the Lord. Didn't grow up going to church, get saved in his bedroom. That's who leads me to Jesus a year later.
Wow.
Yeah. So that's the radio.
That's really cool. But, you know, I was just going to say, you know, when it comes to talking about building issues, when you're talking about discipleship class, ways that you're going about that, and also like how to accommodate people with disabilities, I think this is one of the benefits of a network. And so sometimes we got to dial back and ask the question, like, why does CGN exist? What does it exist for? I think one of the answers to that question is, you know, we've talked about several things that it exists to do, but one of them is to give pastors a lifeline to other pastors who maybe are facing similar situations, somebody they can reach out to and say, hey, I've had an influx of people. Bill, what are you doing for your discipleship class, right? And so I would just encourage anybody out there who says, you know, some of the things we've talked about today, they resonate with you and maybe what you're going through, and you say, how can I get connected? Well, reach out to us here at CGN. We would love to connect you with resources and with community that can be a benefit to you in that way. So, Bill, kind of final question here. What are you excited about regarding the future of CGN? What gets you pumped?
I'm excited to see churches that are coming together with gospel unity. There's so many things the world is dividing over. And so I'm grateful to see a collaboration of churches that aren't all identical, different types of people, different types of churches, different, you know, may differ on some non-essential things, but that are able to find unity in Christ, really making Jesus the main thing, making the gospel what it's supposed to be. It's the thing that bridges the gap. It's what brings people together. And so a network of churches that is going about to see other churches planted, to see healthy churches planted, to see churches that are going, like you said, guys that are already doing it, but I need help. I need to reach out to someone that's a little further along than I am, becoming a resource, a network where we can provide resources to guys that are struggling. It gives those guys that are further ahead a chance to reach back. It'll give those guys that are getting started a chance to, you know, to receive help. So I think at the end of this, you know, we end up with a much stronger church. Mm-hmm. And that's my prayer that, you know, God will use CGN to create, you know, just through this network, there'll be unity in his church. There'll be power in his church. And there'll be people that are moving forward with the gospel agenda for the church.
You know, on that note, Bill, I just want to ask this question because I think it's related to that, the unity thing and all. And, you know, it's no secret that there's just a ton of division in the nation we live in, probably more division than maybe we've ever known in our lifetimes. And I think it's fair to say that there's probably more division in the church today than I can't remember a time when the church was so divided. Where, you know, I mean, you know, there's always the time where you look, okay, there's the cults over there and there's the, you know, the liberalism over there and so forth. And, but, you know, the Bible people are kind of all together. You know, we might have some differences, but we're kind of all together. But now it's, you know, in Bible people, I'm talking about evangelical churches. That's even a loaded term these days. But, you know, it is crazy, the division within the church. And just talk for a moment about that from a race standpoint, from a cultural standpoint. You know, how have you navigated that?
Yeah, that's been, I would say in the last 3 years, I've probably been more discouraged by and bummed out by the points of view, comments made of brothers, you know, in the Lord, guys that are, you know, I think guys can get a hold of a cause and forget the cause that we were called to, you know? And so that cause can be, this could be political causes. It could be a number of different things, you know, from the side of the fence I'm on, you know, it could be racial injustice or these things where I definitely have seen in the last couple of years where people divide over things where I would love rather to see the church, you know, this is our golden moment to come together and say, hey, what's God saying about this? You know, what's God's heart on this issue? You know, how do we come together on an issue like this? And my prayer is, you know, I through this network, I'm hoping we'll see some of that, you know, that we'd be responsible for, you know, putting out what's healthy, putting out what's true, what's in accordance with God's heart, you know? And so the verse, I was just reading this earlier, you know, and when they were trying to take Jesus, right? In John 16, he said, my kingdom is not of this world. If my kingdom were of this world, my servants would fight, right? They fight for it. They wouldn't let you take me. Mm-hmm. And so often what I'm seeing now is guys are like, they think they're fighting for Christ's cause. We're fighting for God. We're fighting for this. We're fighting for that. And it's like, you know, we're from another kingdom. It's not of this world. It's just, we don't have to fight. He's the King of Kings, the Lord of Lords. You know, our agenda is really to be preaching the gospel and sharing that message that's where true change happens, right? So everything broken in our society, be it racial, be it otherwise, that's the hearts of men. that don't know Christ, that are not yielded. It's real challenging, though, when we see church leaders leading in some of the division where it's like, man, you guys know him. You guys know his word, and we're not representing that. So how I've dealt with it is I can't change other people, but I'm responsible for what I say and what I do. And so I've tried to be real careful about that, you know, what I say, what I do. And then I'm responsible for the fellowship that God made me pastor over. And so there I vehemently preach to our body there that Jesus is the main thing. And we will not divide our church over who the next sinner is that is elected for an office. Mm. Our King is Jesus. We're passing through. This is not our home. Mm. Our agenda down here is to be a light and a witness and take as many people with us to heaven. Mm-hmm. That's what we want to be about. And so whatever we can do to that end, we'll spend money, we'll expend energy, and we won't expend any energy, effort, or voice on anything counterproductive to that.
Amen.
Amen. Thanks so much for your time today, Bill.
Yeah, thanks for having me, man.
Very good conversation.
Blessed to be here. Very helpful.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the CGN Mission and Methods Podcast. In our next episode, Pastor Brian and I will be speaking with Kellen Criswell. Kellen serves as the global strategist for CGN, and he's currently based in Hungary. Kellen will be sharing about what he does as a global strategist and how God is working in Europe through Calvary Chapel and CGN. New episodes of the podcast are released every 2 weeks, so make sure you subscribe so those episodes will be delivered to your device as soon as they come out. We'd love to hear feedback from you. You can email us at cgn@calvarychapel.com. And if you'd like to support this podcast, one of the best ways you can do that is by giving us a rating or review on your podcast app. Written reviews are particularly helpful. And if you found this episode or anything else we've done on the podcast helpful, please share it with others. Until next time, God bless you.